This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, October 8th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Indigenous Peoples Day is Monday, but a range of activities and events are taking place over the weekend. We'll take a peek at the Creative Nations Festival at the Dairy Arts Center and look ahead to the Four Corners March in Denver. El Centro Amistad celebrates its 15th annual Cumbre de Mujeres Women's Summit this weekend. And we'll also have a new trends diary for you. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. Host Kathy Partridge and guests will examine Proposition 119, a ballot initiative that calls for raising retail marijuana taxes to fund extracurricular activities for youth. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will bring you an eclectic mix of music until noon. That's all still ahead, but first, these news headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Colorado Senator John Hickenlooper introduced a bill yesterday that aims to end non-competitive leasing of oil and gas drilling rights that was enabled by Congress a century ago. The Competitive Onshore Mineral Policy via Eliminating Taxpayer-Enabled Speculation Act, also known under the acronym name of the COMPETES Act, states federal land managers shall not issue onshore oil and gas leases except through a competitive bidding process. The measure is co-sponsored by Democratic Senators Martin Heinrich of New Mexico and Jackie Rosen of Nevada, and will be pushed as part of President Biden's Build Back Better legislation. According to the Denver Post, Congress passed in 1920 the Mineral Leasing Act to incentivize energy development, and as a result, the government may sell oil and gas drilling rights without taking bids. The Denver Post reports the Bureau of Land Management is required to hold online lease auctions for parcels that are nominated by an anonymous individual or company for possible future drilling. If no bids are received during an online lease auction, BLM officials can currently offer two-year drilling rights for a $75 application fee at a bargain rate of $1.50 an acre. The Denver Post cites a November 2020 General Accountability Office investigation that said the government's leasing process is at a high risk of abuse. The GAO investigation found that 62% of the 89 million acres leased for oil and gas between 2003 and 2019 raised $14.3 billion in government revenues. The other 38% of public land lease under the non-competitive bidding process raised $1.8 billion. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock and Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot held a virtual news conference Wednesday, inviting mayors, legislators, county clerks, election administrators, and community leaders from across the country to converge in Denver for an upcoming event called the National Nonpartisan Conversation on Voter Rights. The two mayors are co-chairing the event, scheduled to take place October 21st and October 22nd. The event is being hosted by the City of Denver in partnership with the Colorado Black Women for Political Action. According to online event information, stakeholders will convene to set a national action plan to end gerrymandering, ensure safe access to the ballot, and prevent partisan efforts that diminish voter access, especially in communities of color. The City of Boulder has moved into their second phase of rethinking policing as it moves towards a new master plan for the Boulder Police Department. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Boulder has now completed its initial stage intended to develop ideas and values to reconsider the way the city approaches policing. They will take the ideas and refine them until they end up with a master plan. Additionally, there was outreach to specific populations, including Latinx and Black African American leadership teams, and an advisory group for people with lived experience in homelessness. The outreach efforts helped develop six focus areas. One of the focus areas was ensuring the right response and role for police and its relationships with other organizations and alternative resources to ensure the most appropriate response to encampments, mental health, and other social issues. The Daily Camera reports that the initial push for police reform in Boulder began in March when a Black Naropa University student was confronted by police in front of his student housing building. The incident escalated, resulting in multiple officers responding on the scene. The city is accepting feedback for the second phase of the project to further refine the values and focus areas. The public can add their feedback through the Be Heard Boulder survey until October 17th. The survey is at the City of Boulder website. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Republican and Democratic members of the University of Colorado Board of Regents put forth opposing resolutions addressing diversity efforts and critical race theory during a University Affairs Committee meeting earlier this week. The Daily Camera reports that while both resolutions failed to pass during the four-member committee meeting, the resolutions will be on the agenda for the Board of Regents' regular November 4th meeting. According to the Daily Camera, Republican Regent Heidi Gunnall, who is announced as a candidate for governor, presented a resolution on the, quote, recognition of free exchange of ideas and prohibition of certain mandatory training programs, end quote. While Democrat Regent Elena Spiegel presented a resolution in, quote, recognition of critical race theory as a legitimate field of academic inquiry and discourse, end quote. The Daily Camera reports both resolutions raised concern among students, particularly as students were not made aware of the resolutions until Monday afternoon. Residents and travelers throughout the Boulder area can expect detours and delays this weekend as the Boulderthon Marathon and Half Marathon is set to take place this Sunday morning, October 10th, between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. Residents can expect county road closures on Sunday for sections of Niwot Road, Neva Road, J Road, and North 51st and 55th Streets. 14th Street in Boulder will be closed to all traffic between Walnut and Spruce Streets starting this morning through 6 p.m. Sunday. On Sunday, sections of 47th Street, Pearl Street, and 15th Street in Boulder will be closed. The event's website at boulderthon.org/community/ has more information on community impacts. Today's weather for the upper Metro Front Range includes mostly cloudy skies with highs in the mid to upper 70s. Boulder has a 20% chance of showers after 5 p.m. Skies will continue to be cloudy into the evening with lows in the upper 40s, low 50s. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 52 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The cities of Denver and Boulder have both shifted to commemorating Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. The latter is still a federal holiday. Both will occur this Monday, October 11th. But the Dairy Arts Center here in Boulder has gotten a head start on the occasion with a series of events including dance performances, a traditional artisans market, and an Indigenous fashion show. I dropped by the dairy earlier this week for details. I'm here in the Dairy Arts Center with J.C. Bial, the visual arts co-curator and facilities manager of this beautiful space. Right. What is in store for this weekend?
Yeah, so we got a huge weekend celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day, which is on Monday, the 11th of October. But we've decided to make it a festival of sorts, starting Thursday with a film and then rolling into Monday with a film as well. But the huge days are going to be the weekend, which is Saturday and Sunday, where we'll have an all-day market from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then have traditional social dances performed as well. There'll be two of those on Saturday and one on Sunday. And then on Saturday night, we have a concert and also a fashion show.
Is this the first time that the Dairy Arts has organized something for Indigenous Peoples Day?
I'm not sure. Maybe they have in the past. I don't know the history. I'm fairly new to the Arts Center myself and actually working with an organization called Creative Nations, which was started earlier this year. Our initial launch was, you know, the exhibition, which is on display now here at the Dairy Arts Center. It's in relation to the missing and murdered Indigenous women epidemic called Seeing Our Rivers Red. And that will run through the weekend as well. And we de-install that next week. But, as a new organization within the dairy, you know, the dairy has taken it a step further and have acknowledged in recognizing land acknowledgement, but wanting to provide space and opportunity for Native artisans such as myself and others, you know, and it's up to me and the other women involved in the organization, Danielle C. Walker and Kelly Holmes, who are artisans in their own right as well, and have really worked really hard along me as well to make this weekend happen. So Creative Nations is just trying to bring a new perspective to the community and allow, you know, the general public to experience something that's really authentic when it comes to Native American arts, performance, and music, and really allowing them to take that in and for us to really help in that educational process, and also ourselves to learn along the way too. So this is all brand new for us here at the Dairy when it comes to Creative Nations and us collaborating with them to make this all worthwhile, you know, and a huge shout out to the city of Boulder too for helping us put this together as well by providing financial support through the Arts Commission.
And how many nations will be taking part in this effort of Creative Nations?
Right now, I'm going to say, you know, I would say between 20 to 30 different representations of nations across the country. We actually got a woman driving all the way here from New York City or the state of New York who wants to serve us food. She's Oneida. And so she's going to be serving traditional food coming from her culture and her tradition. And a lot of the representation when it comes to the Native communities that are going to be here this weekend are just people who live in the general area or who are traveling in from out of state. When it comes to the performance dance groups, you know, we are acknowledging, you know, the land that we are on, which is the Arapaho Nation, and we have them coming in from Wyoming. We got an Apache Crown dance group coming from Arizona, also a Navajo dance group from New Mexico, and our performers are all coming from basically New Mexico, you know, really these days, like a melting pot of nations down there. But yeah, definitely people traveling in from all over and representing different tribes.
And I read in your bio that you're from the Four Corners region of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. What nation are you a member of?
Yeah, I'm Navajo. So I grew up there in Farmington, a little small border town, and eventually moved a little bit onto the reservation, which is basically just a hop and skip away from the little town that I grew up in.
And you mentioned food from an Oneida woman who's going to be coming in and serving food. What else is going to be available at the market?
So at the market, we're going to have vendors who are different artisans, whether they're involved in making jewelry, the visual arts when it comes like painting and drawing, and also some woodwork and photography. But we also got women who are venturing into different realms too as well when it comes to like cosmetics and beauty products. And these are all made by them and Native-owned and Native-run and Native-made. And so, yeah, stuff like that, and also representation from different organizations from the community, not only in Boulder but in the Denver metro area, who are advocating for Indigenous rights, you know, Indigenous equality, or just providing services to ensure that our Native people are taken care of in the community.
And you mentioned that you're an artisan, but you're also a graffiti artist. And I'm wondering just your thoughts on the importance of bringing in people who are in traditionally other spaces, artisans, graffiti, and bringing them into a more institutional fine arts space?
Right. Yeah, I think it's just allowing us to be very expressive in our own way. And, you know, when it comes to graffiti, the graffiti is what got me into art. You know, I mean, I've always loved it, but it was what pushed me to become an artist that I am today. You know, so there's a lot of mural projects happening in that realm when it comes to me doing stuff legally now. But I think, you know, in the larger perspective is, you know, really bringing these arts into this type of space is very important, and I think it's needed. And I'm very appreciative to the Dairy Arts Center and their executive director and the board for allowing us the opportunity to really do this and showcase what type of arts are being made out there. And I think when it comes to Native arts, you know, a lot of it's utilitarian. You know, it's for our daily life and how we kind of dress ourselves or we use to survive. And it's really kind of a thin line, because sometimes it's seen as art, but it's also just what we need to survive. So it's really important to understand, like, you know, a lot of this stuff is culture and tradition, but now it's seen as art. And it's really nice to be able to see that people are continuing these traditions and also their culture to really share what it is they make and use in their respective communities, and just to ensure that their traditions survive. And for me, it's really nice to have the space to show that and allow the community to enjoy it, you know, and really kind of, again, ask questions, get involved, and experience something I'm sure maybe the Boulder community hasn't had in a very long time or at all.
And where can people find out more to just get a sense of what all is in store through the weekend?
Right. So the best thing would be to go to the Dairy Arts Center website, which is thedairy.org. We have a schedule of events on there, different posts about what we're doing. But they could also go to creativenations.art or even, you know, Facebook and Instagram, where we're putting up a lot of this stuff. It's a little bit easier to do it and distribute it in that manner. But yeah, definitely thedairy.org and creativenations.art.
JC Bial, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
No problem. Thank you for coming out. Appreciate your time.
Activists in Denver will mark Indigenous Peoples Day as they have for the past 20 years with a Four Corners March. At a recent action to acknowledge the harm caused by Indigenous boarding schools and forced family separation, KGNU's Elena Claver spoke with Sky Roosevelt Morris of Four Winds and Colorado American Indian Movement.
So Sky, tell us about this event here today, please.
Today they're calling for a national Raising Awareness Day for all of the children that are being uncovered, that will be uncovered outside of these genocide schools in both Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, wherever colonialism has taken and forcibly removed and murdered Indigenous children. That's where the struggle is at.
Is there a national call also for like a Truth and Reconciliation Committee to really look into this? Because clearly there's a lot of resistance on the part of the church organizations.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I could be the one to speak to that, because I don't really personally believe in truth and reconciliation, because there has to be conciliation for there to be reconciliation. There has to be truth-telling before there can be conciliation. And the United States, Canada, a lot of these religious institutions, they don't really seem to want to come with truth. And so there can be no reconciliation if there's no truth-telling.
So that's one part of it. And then another part of it is the ongoing resistance. And can you talk a little bit about the upcoming Four Directions March?
Yes. Yeah, so it'll be the 20th anniversary of the Four Directions March, which started back in 2001. And it was an alternative to Columbus Day. We had been resisting Columbus Day since 1989, and people were getting tired of getting arrested and the onslaught of violence that was consistently happening to people. And so there was a confederation of women called the Red Earth Women's Alliance that came together, and they, a woman by the name of Troy Lynn Yellowwood, a monumental figure in our community who's since walked on, she had a vision about having this Four Directions March. And so from that, her folks like Nita Gonzalez, a bunch of other wonderful Indigenous women came together, along with the Transform Columbus Day Alliance and AIM and Four Winds, and started the Four Directions March. And so this year it'll be on October 11th. We're asking people to meet at each direction at 6 p.m. and then we'll step off at 6:30. We're going to have a vigil. It's going to be a good turnout. So I'm just asking people to follow the Transform Columbus Day Denver Facebook page, and we'll have flyers and updates for folks about some of the details about where each direction will step off. And it's going to be really powerful. We have the Ethiopian community coming out with us and leading the north direction, and the Palestinian community is coming out and leading the east direction. And so it's going to be good.
So that's Transform Columbus Day, and that it's on Facebook?
Yes.
Sky, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
El Centro Amistad is holding its 15th Cumbre de Mujeres, or Women's Summit, this weekend. It's an event organized by Latinas for Latinas that is known as a gathering of women from different generations to learn from each other and in community. Among the featured speakers is Mexican author Laura Esquivel of Like Water for Chocolate. KGNU's Rosana Longo Better spoke with Elena Aranda, founder of Grupo Compañeras and director of health equity and education from El Centro Amistad.
This coming Saturday, October 9th, El Centro Amistad celebrates its 15th Summit of the Women, or in Spanish, La Cumbre de Mujeres, Compañeras y Cumbre Juvenil, an event organized by Latinas for Latinas that is known in the Latinx community as a coming together of women from different generations to learn from each other and in community, how to be resilient, how to get empowered, and the necessary tools and information to learn how to live in this country by keeping their identity and finding their unique voice. This special Cumbre de Mujeres, Summit of Women, is special because it's the 15th year that you have been doing this. And for our Latinx community, 15 years is a big deal. Es el año de la quinceañera. What are you offering for the community this time?
This is the quinceañera, but we also wanted to take out the meaning, you know, of the somebody of 15 years old. La quinceañera es una celebración de honor, ¿verdad?, para nuestras culturas, y queremos dar empoderamiento de qué es crecer, sobre todo en la cumbre juvenil. ¿Qué es crecer? ¿Qué es prepararse? ¿Qué es tener lo que las personas necesitamos para seguir adelante en este país? Y la cumbre es lo que nos da esto, nos da esta oportunidad de aprender de otras mujeres, nos da la oportunidad de tener acceso a la información y tener más ideas y más recursos de cómo yo voy a seguir adelante. Entonces, decir 15 años como una joven despertando en su futuro, en las cosas que nosotros como adultos tenemos que proveer para su crecimiento integral en todos los sentidos de su vida.
That's Elena Aranda just sharing with us the importance of this quinceañera, or 15 years of existence of La Cumbre de Mujeres organized by Centro Amistad. She's sharing with us right now that the theme is the 15 years. This is an awakening to start new, to embrace the world and to take all the tools that are needed in order to be successful in this society. Share with us this idea that you are showing, that this is an international Cumbre de Mujeres now.
This is the second time that we do it virtual. And at first we were really sad. You know, we need the contact of the people. Every year we know and we see again the people who come to the summit. But in the other hand, we see also the gift to have it virtual. And virtual is like, for instance, right now we have maybe a little bit more than 400 women from Boulder County, from Denver, from Colorado, from the States, from Mexico, Guatemala, and other places. So this is a gift. El tema de la cumbre es germinando. Y germinando es como el concepto de resiliencia que en medio de COVID todavía podemos dar, todavía podemos germinar, todavía podemos buscar nuestras semillas para seguir adelante. Este tema para honrar que nuestra resiliencia ahí está como mujeres y que vamos a estar unidas una vez más por las redes.
That was Elena Aranda from El Centro Amistad talking about germinating, the theme of the Cumbre de Mujeres, Compañeras y Cumbre Juvenil. To honor their 15th anniversary, they are going to bring back the best speakers from other years, like Laura Esquivel, author of Like Water for Chocolate, Luz Ruiz, to talk about how to keep your community informed and resilient, Adriana Reikin, how to love without controlling, Rebecca Castella will talk about how to maintain your center in a chaotic time, among others. For more information, go to elcentroamistad.org or cumbrecompañeras.org. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobetter.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, this is Elise Morgan. I'm a psychologist in private practice in Boulder, and I'd like to tell you a story. Recent interest in alternatives to traditional approaches to community safety reminded me of my own experience as a young psychologist many years ago. The memory doesn't start out well. I was an inexperienced driver from New York heading to a Weld County property I had just decided to rent for a short-lived experiment in country living before returning to Boulder for good. I knew I wanted to move there, at least temporarily, but I didn't know how to get there. After an ill-fated attempt at a left turn, I tried to rejoin the traffic, only to sideswipe another car, which then landed in a ditch by the road. Fortunately, the other driver was all right, if a bit shaken. We called the authorities and then waited and waited. Although the other driver and I managed to chat cordially, we were eager to get on with our day. When the deputy arrived, however, he hurriedly explained that he couldn't stay. He had to join his colleagues up the road to manage an emergency. A teenage girl was in a car threatening suicide. As the officer seemed a bit frazzled, and as I was eager to atone for my driving mishap, I identified myself as a psychologist and volunteered to help. The officer mumbled something and went on his way. After about 15 minutes, he returned. "Are you really a psychologist?" "Yes." "Get in," he said. Apparently, his encounter with the teenager had not gone well. I spent several hours with this young woman, connecting with her and assessing her suicidal thinking. Gradually, she agreed to go to the hospital for a full assessment. She, the officer, and I were all relieved. What began as a very unpleasant experience ended as an opportunity for me to help my new community and appreciate the potential role of community members in community safety.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, and Rosanna Longobetter for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Connections with Kathy Partridge.